Good evening. So, we're here to talk about Jews and tattoos. And I want to give an acknowledgement to Rabbi Dr. Nachum Amsel, from whose article I derived much of this. So, the topic is tattoos. And just for fun, I looked up how many people in America have a tattoo. Percentage, what would you guess?
Do we have to break it down by age?
I have the age breakdown.
Because younger people is probably...
This is total.
23%.
I'd say 40.
40, go no further. 40% is right.
Good for you.
And surprisingly, it's 60% women, 40% men, which I would not have guessed. Yeah, the biggest single age group is 25 to 39. That's 40% of the tattoos. The over 65s, it's 5%. Okay, so everyone knows Jews.
I got it when they were in their 30s. And like, they
right.
get it
that may be.
Like in the Marines or something, yeah.
Well, that was in the other generation. I see so many young people, like just in the store, it seems like every young person. And like a football player, you can't even see their arm. Or
they're bad.
Player, they're like, you know, covered.
But only 20% of the 18 to 22 year olds, which surprised me.
So it's turning.
So maybe it's going the other way.
Or maybe their parents are strict.
Or maybe they can't afford it until they get a little older.
I was
going
to say, they don't have parents at that age anymore. So everybody knows Jews don't have tattoos, can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery if you have a tattoo. Or do they?
We'll
find out.
I mean, they do bury them. Maybe they're not supposed to.
So let's go to the source, which is a verse in the Torah, in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, verse 28. I'm going to read this in Hebrew. V'seret la'nefesh, and cutting for the dead, lo titnu, you will not allow, v'vesarchem, in their flesh. And here's the key thing, u'kitovet ka'aka, and the writing, the engraving, the etching, a lot of different words for this, of a tattoo, lo titnu, you will not allow, bachem, in them, ani Adonai, I am God. Okay.
The root of the word tattoo, because I imagine the Hebrew the word tattoo, I mean, what's the root of the word?
It's ka'aka, that is actually the ancient word and the modern Hebrew word for tattoo. Okay.
And it's an ancient thing, so it is quite possible.
No, but
other cultures, yeah.
On the face.
We're going to spend a bunch of time on what is a tattoo. And what's the definition of it? Okay, so let's do some context on this verse, first of all. So this is in the Parsha Kedoshim, which has lots and lots of laws in it. So there are laws before it, laws behind it, it's the same thing. And in fact, for context, I have put in the preceding verse, verse 27, you shall not round off the side growth of your head, and you shall not destroy the side growth of your beard. yes, that's where the commandment, side growth of your head is peyot, peyos, and that's where it comes from. Now, why is that here? So, we're going to spend some time thinking about why this is so, but looking at the second set of verses, it seems that these are things that Gentiles do. So we don't want to imitate Gentiles. Now,
but isn't this before there were Gentiles?
No,
there
this
were
is
Gentiles that weren't. I mean, the Egyptians were
Gentiles. Non-Jews.
Pagans, Gentiles, non-Jews. Let's non-Jews. Use that. That's a better word. The first question for you is, going back to our tattoo verse, is that two commandments or one commandment? Now, there's something in here that I put both verses in because I want you to see. So there's a literary structure in the Torah that's a poetic, that's also used in poetry, A-B-A-B. And that's how the Torah works a lot of the time, meaning it starts with a sentence, if you do X, then Y will happen. And then it repeats that whole thing. And if you do Z, then Q will happen. So it's easier to see in the verse 27, you shall not round off the side growth of your head, you shall not destroy the side growth of your beard. They're kind of the same things. They're obviously related. So that's why you go back to the first verse. Are those two things related? It's a rhetorical question, but you can answer if you wish. And how, if is that related to the verse that came before it?
There's that in biblical Hebrew, that vav is all important.
That is true.
And there is a vav there in 28. Ducha tovet.
Yes.
Also.
So my first instinct would be that yes, they're connected.
And I would also agree, and also because the word for and you shall not is not repeated in Hebrew.
It is repeated in Hebrew. It's the lo.
It's a lo.
Lo-ti-nu.
There's another lo.
Oh.
But there is that vav, so.
There is it, but there's a vav in the beginning of the first clause also.
Which connects it to whatever came before.
Right.
It's when those vavs stop that you sort of have ended the section.
So.
The one seems to be specifically for the dead, meaning, as you say, maybe a pagan practice of cutting yourself for a spirit or something, whereas etching tattoos, I don't know if there's that kind of practice. To me, they seem distinct.
But I would think that they're the same thing, because in verse 27, you're talking about cutting things, and in verse 28, you're talking about cutting hair in 27, and you're talking about cutting skin in 28.
And puncturing skin.
Yes, but you have two skin things in 28. And two hair-cutting things in 27. So, let's look at it from a different angle. Is there any reason given why you shouldn't do these things?
Well, we don't see the we're not seeing the whole context.
I am
the
Lord.
No, but then just in this verse.
Just in this verse, yeah, I'm the Lord.
Well, you do see, but that's not necessarily a reason, right? Because these are commandments. And it's God giving you the commandment.
Right, and the whole point of a commandment is because the famous thing in our household is, why do we eat matzah? Because God said so.
Right. So, the answer...
There's another reason also, because for the matzah, because they have to be on the 11, etc.
But different day. They had plenty. Yeah. They had enough time to steal all the jewelry.
I always wondered about
borrow.
I thought it was borrow. Donated. Yeah.
Well, according to Jewish tradition, there are two separate commandments in verse 28. Not cutting yourself and not tattooing. So, and there's no reason given here. So we'll move on with that, but I want to point out one interesting way you could have read it, since you just brought up the I am God. So there is a reading, which we will see further, that what that verse is really saying is you should not create a tattoo of I am God on your skin. And we'll see that. That's going to be important coming up. Okay, so we won't leave the verse till we see what Rashi says. Rashi is the great medieval French exegete. He was a wine grower in Troyes in Provence in France. And he comments on the first part of the verse, cuts for the dead. So this is the part we're not dealing with. And he says that this was the practice of the Amorites, to make cuts in their flesh when a person related to them died. So cuts seem to be some kind of cutting your flesh seems to be a mourning practice of the surrounding nations. And Rashi goes on to imply the reason for this is that this was a custom of idol worshippers to scar their bodies as a ritual of mourning. Consequently, non-Jews must have written words in the tattoos on their bodies as a death or mourning ritual. So the Torah comes to say you shouldn't do that. Now Rashi explains this more clearly in his comment on the Talmud part, which we will get to. But it seems to be here about imitating Gentiles. And We've also seen now thrown in the first part about idolatry, because these are idol worshippers. So, just to know here, idolatry is what I always call the black hole of the Torah, the black hole of Judaism. Torah is very, very strict when it comes to idol worship. It's prohibited absolutely, and not only can you not do it, you cannot benefit it from in any way. So, I cannot open up an idol store and sell them to people, even if I don't worship them, because I'm benefiting from idolatry. And it gets much worse than that, but there are many, many, many laws about it. So it suggests that the idea for this mitzvah is somehow connected to idol worship, and that's why we don't do it. Okay, now we go on to Rashi's other comment on the second part of the verse where he talks about etch a tattoo. And I'll just warn you that you see the word etch here, you're going to see different words all over the place. So what does he say? What he's defining a tattoo. An inscription etched and sunken. And if you look at the words, they're somehow related to the word ka'aka. It's above my pay grade as an etymologist, but that's what he has. Never to be erased, for one etches it with a needle and it remains permanently black. And so here we have the visual aid of exactly what a tattoo is.
I'd rather not be seeing this.
That was a very nice job in getting visual aid, Bob.
Thank you very much. I pride myself on those audio visual aids.
There's no audio.
But very basically, we have epidermis on the surface. We have derma underneath it, or dermis. And you have to puncture the epidermis to get to the dermis and put ink in it. That's what a tattoo is. So, it's the incision and the ink. Now we go to the Talmud. We go to the Mishnah. So this is in the tractate Makot, which means lashes. It's about punishments. One who incises a tattoo. So the Mishnah is defining now what does it mean to have a tattoo. If he inscribes but does not puncture, so that means if he writes on top of his skin but not below the skin, or he punctures but does not inscribe, so if he pierces the flesh, the epidermis, but he does not inject dye, he is not liable until he inscribes and punctuates with ink or with coal or with anything that leaves a permanent mark. So liable is one of these Talmud words, chayav, and it means it's a legal thing. When you are chayav, you have now incurred a penalty or a reward. So that makes it the commandment. Ink and coal. Coal is the thing that you see in late night movies about Egyptians or in tomb paintings, and the women have this very dark blue eyeshadow. That was a common coloring agent in the ancient Near East. What's happened right now in the Mishnah so far is the actual definition of a tattoo has been expanded from Rashi. Not exactly, right? So it's three parts that creates a tattoo. It's the puncture, it's the ink, and the fact that the ink is permanent. And those things will be very important later on in the definition of a tattoo. Now we go on to the second part of this Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, he is not liable, there's the word liable again, liable for what? For punishment, until he writes there the name. As it says, you shall not make any tattoo on yourselves, I am Lord. So the name is Adonai, it's God's name. And Rabbi Shimon says, that's what you are prohibited from doing, is writing Ani Adonai.
So anything else is okay, is what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You write other stuff.
You can do a battleship.
Okay. Well, we're up.
You can do Jesus on a cross.
We're not fully done yet. Oh, you can't do that. Yeah. I will say, however, the halakha does not follow Rabbi Shimon.
I thought they didn't come to conclusions.
No, that's why I'm giving it to you. I give you the answer. That's the benefit. Okay, so now the Gemara is commenting on that. And we have Rabbi Aha, the son of Rava, says to Rav Ashi, Does it mean not until he actually inscribes the words, I am the Lord? No, replied he. It means, as Bar Kappara taught, he is not liable until he inscribed the name of some profane deity, another god, a foreign god.
Jesus.
As it says, and by the way, this is now the same verse. We were saying etched tattoo. Now put on you any written imprint, I am the Lord. I am the Lord and no other. So, the Gemara here is debating whether it's just God's name in Hebrew, Adonai, or is it the name of any pagan deity that is the culpable act? So, according to the first rabbi, and it's echoed by Maimonides many centuries later, the Jewish aversion to tattoos is part of an age-old polemic against idolatry, contravening God's declaration that I am the Lord, especially when paying explicit homage to a foreign god. In the view of the second sage, now, Rabbi Ashi, the biblical ban on tattoos is not a rational, there's no reason for it, it's not non-rational, there's no explicit reason, it's just this is one of these I am God commandments, eat matzah, I am God, do this. And that's what the dispute is at this point. Everyone get that? These two comments?
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on where you put, on how you do your translation here, whether I am God is part of that verse or not part of that verse. So that's where we stand now. But notice that in the beginning, Rashi was talking about the reason against tattoos was because of Gentiles imitating the practices of non-Jews. And now Maimonides and this rabbi are saying, no, it's about idol worship. So those are the two big players here. Okay, now we move along to the famed Maimonides, the Mishneh Torah, which is around 1100 CE. And it's the negative commandment not to write on the body like idol worshippers. The etched-in writing against which is spoken of in the Torah, and we're talking about our verse, is not to make an incision in one's flesh and fill the incision with paint, ink, or any other dye, which enface. This is some English translation. This was an idolatrous custom, so there's the idol worship, to make themselves to idolatry, proclamatory that every one of them is a sold slave to it and indentured in its service. And there was a practice in those days that when you had a slave, you wrote your name on the slave's hand. So I think that's probably what he's referring to about sold slave. And this was done not just by Jews, by the way, but by all the peoples around them. And from the moment one will enface with any kind of dye which enfaces, after making an incision in any part of the body, whether it be done by man or woman, he or she is lashed. So that's the punishment, whiplashes.
And for tattooing yourself or for tattooing someone else? Or doesn't it matter?
It does matter, and we'll see.
Okay, fair enough.
If one wrote but did not enface with dye, or he did enface with dye but did not write the incision, he is not guilty. So this is back to the two aspects, puncture and the dye. He must do both, write by incision and etch with dye as it is said. And again, he quotes our verse. So Maimonides is in codifying this prohibition, explains it was the custom of idol worshippers to permanently write on their flesh that they were servants of their god. He adds, as we will discuss, that the tattoo includes both the cutting of a permanent indentation in the flesh and the writing of that indentation with a permanent ink. But it seems clear that even if the intention had nothing to do with any form of idol worship, a Jew was still prohibited to put a tattoo on his or her body. Meaning, while it's initially about idol worship, the tone of what Maimonides is saying is, don't get a tattoo. No matter whether it's God's name, not God's name, whatever. That seems to be the sense of it.
And he doesn't give any reason for that, like a fence around the Torah?
He just thinks it's a flat-out violation of the commandment of the Torah. Now, this is interesting because, you know, it's always the famous thing, right? People put prohibitions against things that people are doing at the time. Otherwise, you know, there's no prohibition in the Torah about swimming after you eat, is my favorite example. And indeed, if we look later on in the Tanakh, and here in the book of Isaiah, I brought in two verses that seem to show that Jews are having tattoos. So, Isaiah 44:5, one shall say, I am the Lord's, and another shall call himself by the name of Jacob. And another shall engrave on his hand unto the Lord, and it's the same word, Yichtov, Yichtov Yado, and nickname himself by the name of Israel. So these are things people are doing, and apparently people are writing on their hand the name of God. That's what the verse clearly says to say. And by the way, if you go online and you look up how this verse gets translated, they're sneaky. I think the plain translation is engrave on his hand, and they change it to like engrave with his hands, which is a completely different meaning.
But Yichtov is just to write.
Yeah, that's biblically it means more engraved. It's the same. No, that's Kaka's tattoo.
Right.
But it says ketovet, to engrave or to etch.
Yichtov.
Which is the modern Hebrew word kotev is to write. When it's used in the Bible, it typically means to engrave. So, yes, it is the same word. And there's another verse in Isaiah. Behold, I have graven thee on the palms of my hands. Thy walls are continually before me. Once again, what does that mean, to grave something on the palms of hands? It's probably to do another of these hand tattoos. Okay. Now since we're really into it, I have some things that are not on the sheet for the moment about tattoos. So, first question, what is the measure of a tattoo, right? So, when there's a prohibition, let's say there's a prohibition against writing on Shabbat. It's one of the 39 melachot, forbidden labors. How much do you have to write to incur the penalty? And the answer is 2 letters. You write 1 letter, you're okay. So, of course, very Talmudic. They always want to know, what is the measure of a tattoo? How big? What constitutes tattoo that you get punished for? So Maimonides says it's just some kind of mark that's recognizable. The Sefer HaChinuch, the book of mitzvah education, which is in the Middle Ages, says even 1 letter and you get lashed. The Tosafot say a minimum of 2 letters because they're actually making an analogy to
writing
on Shabbat. So, it's 2 strikes and you're out.
Did they actually carry out the lashings?
I mean, yes, they
did. I mean, I know they did in ancient times, but did they in the Middle Ages?
No, because the rabbis really did not have much authority in the Middle Ages. It's a whole interesting dynamic from what was. They didn't have any authority in the ancient period either. But lashes are in the Torah, and there's a thing about giving people 40 lashes.
That's in the Torah.
Yeah, and there's a whole thing about how you do it and how many you can take. And so that's a...
So if they're going by 2 letters...
He gets malchus.
Yes.
If they're going by 2 letters, is a flower?
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, if somebody had a heart or something else, would that not be a problem?
Okay, so we'll get there. We'll get there. The next question. So this is going back to Michelle's thing. So now we're back on the sheet. This is, again, continuing in Maimonides. This is to say against the one who does the writing, in other words, the one who is doing the tattooing, but he who upon the flesh he etched in writing was done is not guilty if he assisted, unless he assisted in the manner to constitute an overt act. But if he contributed nothing to work itself, he is not lashed.
So
if you pass out in the bathtub and you wake up and you have Stella written on your forehead, you don't get lashed.
Well, then what about if you go to a non-Jewish tattoo guy?
No, so there you're assisting, so there you get lashed.
You're assisting because you went to them.
Because you went and you're telling him, you know, put mom on my right forearm.
But if we were to go together and I were to pay for her tattoo, then she would not be liable?
Probably not. You may have found a loophole.
Anybody want a tattoo?
Judy's buying.
So, yes, so the lashes go to the tattooer, not necessarily the tattooee. Okay, next question that we just heard. Is a picture tattoo a violation? So, the origin of the prohibition we've now seen is writing the name of a non-Jewish god on your skin. So, what about a picture? Well, it seems, according to the wording of the Mishnah, it seems to address this, and it says the violation only occurs, Torah violation occurs, if you put letters on your skin permanently. Now, there was that argument between Rabbi Shimon, where he said the name of the idol must be written in the name, as opposed to the name of God, and the halakha did not follow him. But the verb used here is to write or to engrave. Now, so that's, it was generally taken as, no, a picture's okay. However,
you can engrave a picture.
Yeah, but that's not how they interpreted it. Because, again, it's the idol worship thing.
Well, also the way you say it is different, because you would write a letter, but you would draw a picture. And it explicitly says, write.
Yeah, that's a toughie, because if you're tattooing it, you're still really engraving it. Because, again, puncture and dye. So that's what would count. Now, we go on to this next quote here. Also back again from Makot. Rabbi Malkiah, as citing Rabbi Ada bar Ahaba, said it is prohibited to powder one's wound with burnt wood ash because it gives the appearance of an incised imprint. So he's talking about a medical procedure whereby you have a wound and you're putting in, what do we put in the powder now? You know, it's a... So, well, yeah. In those days, they used wood ash, which is charcoal, and it leaves a dark mark on you. And the Gemara is saying you can't do that because someone might come and think you have a tattoo. Now, if you've got this wood ashy thing on you, it's obviously not looking like letters, it's more looking like pictures. So you would think that that's not good. However, the Shulchan Aruch, which now comes around 1400, explicitly says the Gemara is wrong. One is permitted to put ash on the wound.
But maybe it said that because it's, you know, Pekorot HaNefesh, to protect life. And
it's a medical procedure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, and I didn't quote through all of it, but it does seem to be referring, it's in a section of the Shulchan Aruch where it's responding to all these tattoo questions. Oh. So the point of this is, it seems like that a tattoo of a picture is forbidden, but because it's not coming out of the Talmud, because they refute that, it turns out that it's a rabbinic violation and not a Torah violation. So that's, for those of you who are wanting to get picture tattoos, it's still prohibited, but it's not at the same level of punishment.
And so you won't be lashed.
You will not be lashed.
So we can get a battleship.
Maybe just a few lashes.
Yes. Whatever happened to the big heart with mom in it? You know, everything's a product of when I was a kid, or an anchor if you were a sailor.
Yeah, the anchor of the battleship.
Yeah.
Popeye had the anchor.
Next question here. What about a non-permanent tattoo?
Like the kids here.
So,
well, it's not really a tattoo then.
Those little things that you like rub on and stay for 3 days or something.
Well, they didn't. Well, it's not permanent. It didn't puncture the skin.
That's correct. But that doesn't mean it's not necessarily okay. So this goes back to the Gemara now.
Right, in the pizza.
Of having the wood ash and whether that's okay or not. So what's an example of this? It's when you go to the amusement park and they, or in Steve's case, when you go to a club and they stamp your hand,
yeah, right.
So you go out, you come back.
Right.
By Jewish law, is that okay?
Oh, boy.
And the answer is, as the crowd has said, it's permissible because there is no penetration into the skin and there is no permanence to the markings. Now, what about, I learned about this while researching it, So apparently there's a thing women do where they get cosmetic tattoos, like eyeliner,
yes,
eyebrows. Is that okay? And the answer seems to be yes, because once again, it's not permanent. Apparently it lasts about 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's only semi-permanent, so that seems to be okay. Next question. So now we know all about tattoos. What about removal of tattoos? Is it necessary or is it prohibited once you got it? So the Torah seems to have, Torah does have a prohibition against getting tattooed, but there doesn't seem to be a requirement to remove it once you have it. Now this became a big issue after the Holocaust in Israel because many survivors wanted to get the tattoos removed. And the rabbis actually ruled in Israel that they should not remove the tattoos because it was a proof of what they had endured, and there was Holocaust denial going on, and that they should wear it as a badge of courage to show what they had survived.
And obviously they didn't request it or contribute to having it put on.
Right. That's not
really
there they wouldn't get the lashes.
That's really a social answer.
The rabbi said it.
But there are halakha that are for social reasons.
No, it's not.
Yes, there's a lot. Well, there is nothing in the Torah about removing a tattoo. So the question is, still, is it okay to remove a tattoo? Is that prohibited?
Are you doing further damage to the body?
The reasons you might not want to do that is because of further damage to the body and because it's painful. You're not allowed to do that to yourself, but in general it is allowed. And there's a very cute story in here about a man, a Baal Tshuva, someone who became religious. So he had a large tattoo on his bicep of a naked woman. And then he became religious and he went to the rabbi and said, "Can I put on tefillin over my naked woman tattoo?" And the rabbi ruled he did not have to get the tattoo removed, but he should endeavor to cover as much as possible with his placement of his tefillin.
And besides the tattoo, you need a big tefillin.
Yeah. Okay.
What did you do after services?
Roll the sleeve down. Finally, the last item for tonight is the burial views. So, can you bury a tattooed Jew in a Jewish cemetery? And most people think the answer is no. It turns out this is a famous old wives' tale. I don't know in this era I can use that term or not. It is okay to bury them, and I wanted to show you the proof because I think it's very interesting. So, we have this description from the book of Kings, 2 Kings chapter 13, verses 20 and 21, and they're talking about Elisha the prophet. So Elisha died, they buried him, and along came Moabites, who are bad guys, and they invaded the land. And it came to pass, probably one of their fighters died, and they wanted to bury him, and they put him into Elisha's grave. And God immediately caused a miracle to happen that as soon as the man touched Elisha's bones, he became alive again. And he stood up on his feet and he left the grave. So, the Mishnah says, commenting on this verse, why did this happen? Because a wicked man may not be buried beside a righteous one. And that's the basic sense of the halakha. So, it seems to be a very clear Mishnah, and there's two things that go on here. First of all, the Mishnah is not talking about this case. The Mishnah is really talking about a evil person who is executed at the hands of a Jewish court for a capital crime. So that's not the same as this particular bad guy that went into the grave. Nevertheless, this concept was codified in the Shulchan Aruch, meaning it became Jewish law that you don't bury an evildoer next to a good person. And that caused even further stratification because there are actually levels of cemeteries. Because a really bad person can't be buried next to just a plain bad person. So it turns out this is one of these famous Jewish laws that were on the books but never really practiced for hundreds and hundreds of years. We don't have multiple cemeteries for good people and medium people and bad people. Right? No one here has ever observed a cemetery like that. So why not? Well, there were two basic reasons. One is that the law was unenforceable because that involved somebody judging how bad a person is to where cemetery he should go to. And second of all, there's a concept in Judaism that death in and of itself is an atonement for your sins. So when we die, we automatically get atonement. So everyone is righteous who goes into the cemetery. Now, the only exception to this rule, historically, were suicides. But even then, the mentality has been that a suicide is not in their right mind, so they're like a sick person, and therefore they can be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Now, again, I don't know of anyone that still does that today. Now, the final piece of this is that...
Who excludes suicides.
The final piece of this, however, is burials are conducted by the Chevra Kedisha in a given synagogue, and they really have the authority. So if they have a body that has lots of tattoos on it, they may not allow that person to be buried in their cemetery. So it's filtered down to the local level.
I thought that there were some Jewish cemeteries that, like, near the edge of the cemetery is where they buried people. That committed suicide.
They wall off a piece.
Not even necessarily wall it off, but it was sort of removed from where people, most of the people were buried.
But most cemeteries now are privately owned. Because I know, I remember in a class with Rabbi Zeller a long time ago, they said, like, you know, there's people who are buried in, you know, who are cremated that they put in.